everyone, welcome to Grip Lock Foundation Disc Golf Weekly Podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor. Connor's back this week.
Hey,
Connor's
what's
back.
Up?
Pretty Connor's big podcast coming at you today. We're going to start off with a little Patreon question of the week. We're going to go over some Idle Wild results. They weren't idle, they were wild. A little Trevor's trivia. Yep. We saw get a little update from P. McBee on his injury. And then we also have some input on the Paul McBeth versus Climo debate via our Instagram comments.
Dude,
and then we'll wrap it all up with grip locked power rankings because we probably got to mix some things up. Yep. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Today's show is sponsored by our good friends over at Double G Craft Jerky. If you haven't tried them yet, I'm sure you've seen their commercials on the Pro Tour Network and such. If you haven't heard us talk about it, they've got an amazing flavor set. They've got Hot Boom Sauce, Garlic Lover's Dream, Nate Sexton Sweet and Spicy. That's their top seller. McBeast Barbecue, Original, Smash Crack Pepper. The list goes on. My favorite is Teriyaki. I think they've maybe been teasing a new flavor. I have heard that on the DL. I want our own flavor, honestly. If you're listening, Double G, we are in. But yeah, it's an amazing snack for out there on the course. They also support the Double G Children's Foundation. For every bag sold, it contributes to the promotion of disc golf to the youth. They buy discs and baskets for inner city children and donate thousands to families in need of money for events. They also offer a 1 ounce bag that's a huge hit for player packs because that's just an awesome player pack item. You can buy hats as well. They have some other accessories now, I think, but I wear their hats all the time. They're really cool. And they also do trail mix now and dried fruit if you're not into the jerky game. Very delicious as well. They also do subscriptions if you want jerky delivered to you. They have different month increments you can do, and you can pick how many bags you want. You just have it straight to your doorstep, so you don't have to worry about that. You can get gift cards as well if you want to gift it to somebody. All of this you can get for 10% off with code Foundation. Link is in the description, so make sure to check out Double G Craft Jerky. Friend of the show, Double G Craft Jerky.
All right, let's kick it off with a little Patreon question of the week. If you're wondering where this question comes from, it's shout over at patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. You can join the Heiser Club there. You can actually get a 7-day free trial. And we have a weekly podcast over there called The Mailbag, where basically you ask a bunch of questions. We answer all of those questions, each and every one. And it's a good time. People
it's the best
really
part
like
of the
it.
Week.
Yeah, it's a really fun time. And sometimes we get to open packages. So if that sounds interesting to you, you want to go a little behind the scenes with it. In addition to exclusive content, monthly videos, contests, all kinds of stuff, that's patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. This question comes for us from Zach Hurrah. He said, what is one course you've always wanted to play but have never got to play it?
Definitely Maple Hill.
Maple Hill, yeah. Pretty easy one. Connor?
I'm trying to think of another one, though, because that's how we answer on the mailbag, too. Because there's definitely more than one.
The Beast in Finland's the other for me.
Ooh, that would be sick. What's the Kona Piste course again?
Franz Ferdinand.
I think that'd be my answer. I always just had an obsession with Kona Piste, like in my early disc golf days.
I would love to play the Preserve. That would be fun. Like a lot of the Pro Tour courses that I haven't played, I still want to play the Fort. We wanted to play the Fort when we were in Utah, but it was flooded. I'm trying to think if there's any other tour stops that really stand out to me. Definitely got to cross a bunch off the bucket list. Maple Hill is atop that list for sure. Yeah, I don't know. Of the courses that they're playing right now, I think I'd like to play the Toboggan.
Yeah, it seems fun.
That seems fun. Like, it would be a fun one because it's very, like,
it's probably,
distinct.
Like, fourth or fifth on my list.
It's very, like, it's a very distinct course. Like, you would, it's unique because you're on the, you know, the Toboggan tracks. Idlewild looked like a lot of fun. I know you played that one. And, yeah, I don't know if I ever want to play Northwoods.
I've played there, too. It's fun. It's a good time.
I'm sure I'd have fun.
So Franz Ferdinand Park's your answer?
Kona Piste?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you have it. Again, if you want to participate in that, patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. We're going to go into some Idlewild results here. On the FPO side, we had Valerie Mandahano taking it down for the first time since, I think, first Elite Series since Portland of last year.
You know what's crazy, too, is whenever I interviewed Val, this would have been before she joined Discraft. This is pretty early on when I was doing my show. The one event she said she wanted to win a lot, like on the Pro Tour, was Idlewild.
Makes
so
sense.
Congratulations, Val.
There you go. She took it down. Own Scoggins came in second, so I owe Trevor some Chick-fil-A. If you haven't watched the preview show,
God bless.
First off, why aren't you watching the preview show? Secondly, we made a little Chick-fil-A bet. I thought this was Own Scoggins' weekend. I bet Chick-fil-A on it. She only came in second.
You emptied the clip on that one. That was a heat check.
Yeah.
So I'm not.
Holland Hanley came in third, and that kind of rounds out the top three.
Another one that I would not have seen coming, really, Holland Hanley at that course.
Yeah, I honestly, I think I literally said that on the preview show.
We kind of do that a lot and then look dumb.
But Own Scoggins, expected. Valerie Mandahano, expected if you remove past history at the course, and if you remove this season. Like, it's a course that makes sense for her to play good on.
A ton of sense, yeah.
She just hadn't really done it in the past that much. I think she might have gotten on, like, one lead card previously, and she's been having a kind of up-and-down season. She hasn't had... She made her return from her ankle injury at DDO, and she hasn't had the season that we expected, I guess I could say. Because she's had a fine season. It's just not what we expected. The big thing for her is because of how much she missed... I believe this win secures her spot at the Pro Tour finale.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal.
That'll be really big because she can win that. Obviously, we didn't have Kristen at this event, but Val played really well. I'll say, like, Kristen would have had to play really well to beat Val this weekend. You said it. This is a kind of a course that, like, last year when Val was playing really well, we would have thought, because, like, Valerie's biggest skill is usually her angle control, her ability to hit gaps. She can be very good on the putting greens. She lacks distance usually. And this was a course that didn't require that hole to hole. So this would have made a lot of sense. But this year we just haven't really. I think we actually said that on the preview show as well. You kind of threw Alexis Mandahano in and said, you know, normally I'd predict the other Mandahano, but we just don't know what to expect this year. And this is great. Like, it's great that we got a good win out of her. Hopefully this means that we can expect more of the same moving forward, because she is a great force on that FPO field that we were missing for a long time.
Well, especially the FPO field that's all over the place right now, because the consistent factors...
There are some crazy scores in
there. The consistent factors are Kristen Tatar, Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen. Those are the consistent factors, we think. Kristen's gone right now. Paige broke her leg out for the season. Katrina Allen, you might have thought, oh, she didn't play this weekend. She did.
I wouldn't say Paige and Kristen. Cat are consistent.
I'm just saying historically, yes.
Yeah, before like last year, but now it's,
I mean, if you're going into a weekend.
Well, I would argue this season, Missy Gannon's been much more consistent. She doesn't have the wins to back it up, but she has won now. So yeah, Missy Gannon's had a better season.
Then.
Not wins wise, but I mean consistency. Yeah. Like, her finishing places have been.
Well, to be fair, we don't have Katrina or Paige in our top five.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, those are normal. Someone's walked up to you and said, Katrina Allen, Paige Pierce, Kristen Tatar, 1, 2, 3, you're like, yeah, it sounds like a normal weekend in FPO.
I'm going to be honest with you, I disagree. Not anymore. This year, that would surprise me a lot. What are you showing me?
I'm letting you do the stats then.
No, you just made a statement that I didn't agree with. That's all.
You just tell them what Kat did, because that was all I was trying to get to.
Yeah, she took 33rd.
Mm-hmm. What'd she shoot?
I don't know why you're doing this to me right now.
I was just letting you take it.
No, okay. You just made a statement like I agree with it, and I don't. I disagree. I think that they are two of those three are the most inconsistent players on tour.
All right, then never mind. Katrina Allen's finish was exactly what Trevor Staub expected out there. He will sign his name to it going into the week.
It
he would have predicted
it
Katrina
Allen.
Does not
shock me. Does not shock me.
28 strokes doesn't shock
me. She
you.
Has taken losses like that this year. She's taken losses like
Idlewild
that this year.
Doesn't shock you.
Not anymore.
Does it shock you,
she
Connor?
Has taken awful finishes this year. I don't know why you're saying that like it's crazy. She has taken awful finishes this year.
Three-round tournament, Katrina Allen lost by nearly 30 strokes.
Am I like, wow, that's really bad? Yes, but
you're
am I...
You're literally the one that brought it up to me when I walked through the door this morning because you were shocked by it.
Not shocked. I said it's crazy because it's like, that's really bad, but that's what she's been all over the place this year.
Then it's not crazy.
It still is crazy because historically
she's
consistent.
Because her name, it doesn't
you
feel
can't
like
go
it.
Back on what you just said.
What did I say?
Is she consistent or isn't she?
Not anymore.
So then it's not crazy.
It's crazy this season what she is doing. And it still strikes me when I see her name at the bottom of the leaderboard, but it doesn't shock me anymore.
You'd be a little surprised if you saw her name that far down there.
No, not surprised. Not surprised. It's just driving home what is happening this season. You stop laughing at me. Like, that's a legit point.
That's fair. You're just talking out of both sides of your mouth. You're either surprised by it or you're not.
Oh my gosh. Not surprised.
Okay, so you didn't find it crazy, you didn't find it anything. When you scroll down, you're like, yeah, that's normal.
No, crazy and surprising are two different words that have two different meanings.
Okay, well, we got off of shock, then it was crazy, then it was surprise, and now we're getting off all three.
Okay, I'm done talking about this. All right. It's pissing me off.
Katrina Allen's finish was shocking. 28 strokes out of the lead. No one would have ever expected it. Valerie Mandahano, very solid out there. Owen Scoggins, just as expected. Missy Gannon, just as expected. And Kristen Tatar probably would have won if she was there, but she wasn't, so it doesn't matter. On the other side, we have Gannon Burr taking it down. 32 under par, one stroke off of the pace that was set by Isaac Robinson last year. Weather was a little better this year. Actually, a lot better this year overall.
It was only bad the one day.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as last year. Because last year we had Isaac Robinson one stroke better, but he pulled ahead of the field by like six. This year you had, a slew of people still in it. It wasn't a runaway for Gannon and one stroke worse. But here's the thing about Idyllwild, and it's not just Ganon Burr. This course is easy. And I wouldn't have said that going into this week. I would have actually argued the opposite. I would have said this course is not easy. But then I watched these pros. This might be the softest course on tour. Am I wrong?
I think so. Obviously, because the tour is so deep, the top of the field is all, like, when you have so many players that are good disc golfers these days, like 70 or whatever in that MPO field, the top half of the field is always going to be having a good weekend. Like, you can expect that. That's just how it works these days. If you're not, you're getting buried. So I think that puts all of the courses on a much harder critique than they've ever been in the past, because now you're going to see maybe 30 to 40 guys all having solid weekends up against the course. Whereas instead of like getting a smaller sample size and being able to just write it off as like, well, those guys just went off this week, the course isn't that soft. Now, because it's a larger sample size, it's a lot easier to kind of get a feel for the course. And I think that this course, if you are getting off the tee, you are going to shred this course, because a lot of it is just making it up the fairway. You have so many shorter par fours where if you just land your tee shot in a good spot, you're basically throwing, you know, you see a lot of overstable approach disc shots, like the kind of shots that pros just don't really mess up. And so therefore, when you're going to have a decent group of guys that are getting off the tee, and you have, you know, when you have so many good accurate players these days. So yeah, I think it does play a little soft. Now, in its defense, there are separators. I do think it's a good course because it can play soft when you're shredding it. But there are still some separators. Now, I will say it doesn't necessarily point that direction when, like, Ganon Burr goes, like, what, bogey-free the last round?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it doesn't necessarily
point that way. There's not a lot of orange at the top.
But I think it lacks a little bit in the bogey department.
The course averaged 5 under.
Yeah, I think there's a lot, because whenever you have a shorter par four, unless you kick immediately off the tee, like really early, you know, pros are so good at scrambling that it's really hard to believe that even after a bad drive, they're not going to get themselves somewhere up the fairway to where all they have to do is get up and down for par. So whenever you have a course like that, to where even if they do kick early, all they got to do is just launch something up there. You know, that's when you see a lot of the pars, because guys are just going to, they can scramble at the highest level. And like Ganon Burr's making 60 footers all over the place. So I think that maybe it's a course that could use a little bit of OB. I think like for instance, the holes that have like the built up greens, like 17 is the par three, but then there's what's the par four early on there that has that?
The built up green, I think it's 7. Well, what do you mean by built up? Like the poles?
No,
oh, 6.
It's 6, yeah. So like some of those shorter par fours like that kind of use that as their defense, where it's like it almost makes you, players want to play for like the 35 footer, which I think is a really interesting thing. You don't see a lot of, like on this course with those greens, you could see it on the final, on 17 in that final round too. You actually have players, it almost acts as like this force field where you have players purposely trying to pick their landing spots short of those trenches to then make edge of circle one to circle two putts. And that's a really interesting thing, because like we don't really see that a lot in disc golf. You don't even see a lot of intentional landing zone picking a lot. And this course offers that. So I think maybe if it had a little more of that, a little more of the trouble, then that could probably help it out a little bit, because I think it just needs a little more bogey potential.
No, definitely. I think,
but Ganon played out of his mind. Like, that's fair.
Yeah, no, Ganon. Well, but Calvin Heinberg was only 2 strokes shy of him. Yeah. Isaac Robinson was only 4. Heck, Paul Ulibarri was only 6 when it was.
Well, Isaac's a good example, because like how many bogeys did Isaac take towards the beginning of that round?
He had 2 bogeys the entire final round. Only one at hole 2 was it.
So like
hole 2 and then hole 13.
He's a guy who like early in that round was finding some trouble. And like you just said, he wasn't making bogeys when he was, like, he was not throwing great shots at the beginning of that round, wasn't making bogeys. A good example is like hole 1, okay? You have the OB on the left, but you're giving players a ton of room to swing it to the right and miss right. Just put in another line and you'd make that drive really tough. And it's already a short par 4. You had guys eagling it from like close. I think there's stuff like that where it's like, yeah, just throw in another line. If you put in another line on hole 1, you'd make that drive a lot tougher. A lot of guys bail out to the right. And maybe they need to just tighten up a few other spots. But that course is fun. I like it. I think it's very unique style. We don't see a lot of woods golf at all, but we also don't see a lot of these like chippy, like landing zone and scramble type plays. I think it's fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I think the course definitely has a spot on tour. It's just a course that I feel like if I go back in my head a few years ago, I wouldn't have considered an easy course. And now I go out there and I'm like, yeah, you better shoot like pretty close to double digits every round if you want to win. And like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, the field's just too good.
I mean, Gannon started the round off with four circle two putts in a row. He had a 27 footer on hole one, then a 49 footer, a 38 footer, a 49 footer, a 38 footer to be a part of his six opening birdies. Those end caps are 27 footer on one, a 16 footer on two. He ended up only putting, I say only, 57% from circle two. But I mean, that opening stretch, it felt like this man was about to run away with it. And it wasn't even going to be close because in the same stretch, you had Calvin go par, par, par. You had Isaac go par, bogey, birdie. Yeah. And then Gannon's just shredding.
He was the only one that really got off running.
Now, luckily, at that point, you did have Ricky Wysocki was already kind of done with his round at 13, or he was getting close to being done. So, you at least on the scoreboard, there were some players close to Gannon. But yeah, no, it felt like at the beginning he was about to run away. And he didn't even really cool off. It's just everyone else heated up eventually. Because, like, then Calvin got his stretch going of hole 4 to 8. Isaac's stretch was hole 6 to 10. It, like, comes in waves. Because then Isaac, again, got hole 15 to 18. I think hole round 1, if I'm not mistaken, Isaac opened the tournament with 7 straight. Yeah. He opened the tournament with 7 straight birdies. And then ended up double bogeying hole 8. But through 7 holes, you were like, Isaac Robinson's about to do what he did last year. He's about to just fillet this course. But no, I definitely think the course in general could use a little more teeth. To be clear, if we went out there, we would get chewed up by the course. But the tour level, you can just scroll and look like on the final round to see a double bogey, I have to get to Justin Rozak, who finished in 26th place.
Yeah.
That's the first double bogey.
Well, that's just the shortness of the course. I think when you have a course that's... like I said, a lot of the longer courses, if you make a mistake early, you still got a lot of distance to cover. Whereas this one, it really only takes one full shot on any hole to get you within like 200 feet of the basket. So, or even less on some of them. So I think that they just need a little more teeth, but you know, it's a different style of course too. It's still played very entertaining.
No, yeah, still fun to watch.
And obviously it still produced a result where we had three of the top four players or five players in the world battling out at the end. So, you know, if the best players are consistently rising to the top of the field anyways, regardless of the course, and it's tough to get too mad at it because it's like, well, the result is still something we would expect. You know, it's not like we feel like the good players are really getting, you know, the bad end of the deal.
One thing that I think would be interesting to see is hole 8. It was a par 5. It's 576 foot par 5. Easiest par 5 you might ever see. If it played as a par 4, I'd be very curious what it looks like. Because as a par 5, it averages 4.14. So it averages, basically if it was a par 4, it would just be a tough par 4. But I wonder how many people aren't going for the 3 and are just playing for the 4 because it's a birdie in that scenario that would go for the 3 if it was a par. Because realistically, it's a forehand and hyzer that pans to flat or a backhand hyzer. And then if you throw that first shot good, it plays a lot better to the forehand. But if you throw that first shot good, you basically just have a long forehand into the green. And it's a tour level par 4. Very hard par 4, but it's tour level par 4. And I think what it would also do is it would bring that OB, because there's OB that runs by hole 1. It would bring that into play a lot more.
There are some tweeners.
So I think there's some of those tweeners. I think if they sided with making it like, if they sided with it being the easier par or the harder par, that alone could really step the course up a little bit, because I think it would make players make more decisions on the tee and be like, okay, I was never going for the eagle because it was a guaranteed birdie every time.
Yeah.
Now I am going to go for the birdie, and that alone will make holes play a lot different.
The whole like reachable par 5 thing in disc golf is actually kind of interesting, because like in golf, a lot of par 5s are reachable, but you have to factor in the idea that putting is so difficult that hitting a longer club into a green and trying to get it close and then trying, like, it's still really tough to make an eagle. Whereas when you have a hole, what is it, 12 is the par 5 that was like goes downhill into that gorge?
16.
Or 16, yeah, it's towards the end there. So if you have a hole like 16 in disc golf where the drive is fairly easy, and then the second shot you have guys, it's also not super difficult. You have guys just basically ripping it down. And most of the shots, you know, it's very, for the pros, it didn't seem very hard for those guys to give themselves 60-foot eagle looks just about every time at worst, or maybe like maybe a chip up. But I do think like the idea behind reachable par fives in disc golf is a little bit, if you're not in the woods, if especially if you're in the open to where it's just a matter of distance, I don't know if they should really be around, because almost, it's almost like, what's the point? Because in disc golf, if you make it to 80 feet in the open for eagle, you're making birdie guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed you're making birdie.
Well, unless you have a weird roll. But
yeah. Right, but so that's like, that's the difference. If
you're playing for birdie, you're getting up and down.
That's like in golf, like if you end up greenside in two, you still have to chip up and down just to make birdie, which is difficult. Whereas like in disc golf, you are almost every time going to make birdie. So it's like, I almost feel like reachable, if you're going to have a reachable par five, and this one, and 16 is not the perfect example because there is a little bit of teeth at the end there. Connor just lost his disc spin. But it's like there needs to be maybe a little more of an obstacle to get around. Like the drive, I guess, is somewhat pinched up there, but it's a pretty big landing area. They're throwing hyzers. So I think, yeah, I think it's a little, it can be interesting. Sometimes par fives, I don't know, par and disc golf is just an interesting thing when putting is so much easier than golf. It always is interesting to me.
It is weird
how it plays out.
Well, it's all, well,
and sometimes you just have to like forget about it and be like, this is just two different sports. And it obviously it's all relative and it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It's just like, when you have, if you have a, like at New London, for example, there, a hole number two there is a par four. If it were a par five for the pros, a lot of them would end up with just 100-foot little pitch ups that are pretty open, or even jump putts, or even tap ins for eagle. But instead, it is a par four, which makes it almost impossible to get, but really difficult. So I guess it's just like, how do you want your hole to play? Do you want there to just be a ton of birdies and an occasional eagle, or do you want it to be hard to birdie and have a lot of pars and bogeys?
Well, I think because par is,
I have no idea what the answer is.
I think par obviously is irrelevant, but I think you have to strategically think of how is the par, because in your head you're playing for birdie. In disc golf, it's like, in golf, I feel like the average player is going out and playing for par. In disc golf, I feel like you're going out and playing for birdie.
It is kind of become that way.
And so you have to think, especially on the pro scene, you have to think like, okay, how is this par number going to affect the mentality of the hole? Because I think a hole like hole eight is the best example of this, where as a par five, you're going to have a lot of the field just play for four. But if it was a par four, that wouldn't be true.
Yeah.
And so the three is out there, and it's very out there, to where I think if you make it a par four, players are going to get into more trouble trying to play
for the
three.
It is funny how like, because like what you just said is very true, like, people will do that. And I think it's because the disc golfer, as much as par really doesn't matter, right? It's the final number that matters. Disc golfers always perceive par a certain way in the back of their head. Like birdie versus par has a different like positive reinforcement.
Pars feel like bogeys. Game.
Right. So with that being said, because you will have players who will sit back and play for par, but you're right. Like if you take a par five and turn into a par four, you're going to create more aggressive play because people, it's like they, you walk into a hole with a different expectation, right? Like the tee sign sets an expectation of, if you were to birdie this hole, this is what you are meant to do. And when it's a par five, it's like, okay, the eagle is like the kind of crazy aggressive play. Let's play it for birdie. So I think that's what it is like it sets that expectation that when you step up, because like, it's like if a par three was like, let's say there was a 450-foot par three and you and I were playing the course. You know, our best bet, if it, let's just say there's a little bit of obstacle too. So our best bet would really be to lob a putter or a mid out there and then get up and down pretty easily for par. But because it sets that expectation of this is how you birdie it. And in the back of our mind, we're like, we could. It creates that that want to play more aggressive. So I think that's where it, where it stems from. So yeah. Par does, as much as par doesn't matter, it does have power. So I guess that's why it needs to be thought about.
Yeah. No, I think it definitely,
par has power.
I think it definitely has to be thought about. But amen, I think, brother, you change a few pars and you add some OB, you got yourself a real tough tour course.
I feel like we're finding so many courses like that this year. Because what was the last one that was the KC Wide Open one that we were talking about like that?
Maybe. Players are just the,
or WR maybe.
Disc golfers have just gotten so much better.
It's happening fast.
The player's ceiling is so high. And it just used to be like anomalies, and you know, it was just like, yep, that's a Paul thing, that's a Rick thing, that's a Calvin thing. But now it's just like, no, that's a top 30 thing. And there's just so many players that are capable of shooting that courses are kind of getting exposed. And this one, I think it still very much has a place on tour. It's not going to get memorialed, I don't think.
No.
And it always has really good community support. And I also think you're literally like three or four changes away from this course having some real teeth and really creating those separations. But
I think it's, well, I think it's also just like, I always, every year I find myself really enjoying the kind of woods East Coast swing. Even when they're not in the woods, like even when they go to the toboggan course next, like I like that course a lot too, but I do think that this course is a really good kind of representation of what like wooded courses on the tour can look like. I think it's one that it works out really well. I enjoy it.
Yeah. Now this, I think, brings up an interesting question.
It's at an airport.
Does, it's very close to an airport. Is Gannon Burr now having a better season than Calvin Heimberg?
Well, if you go, so if you go off the wins, he has three to Calvin's two now.
Three elite series wins. Calvin has two elite series wins. Gannon also has two silver wins, whatever you want to factor that to Calvin's one.
Yeah. Well, so, and when you talk about, when you talk about like objective player to player, like if I were to just make a comparison, I usually do count your whole collective season. But when you're talking about player of the year, I'm very much more like, what did you actually accomplish? Like, what are the wins? Because like player of the year, and I think it should really be based on who is winning the most. You know, I think consistency is more something that, like, yes, if I were to evaluate a player, like if I were an analyst who was doing just a strict player analysis, then I would capture their whole season. But ultimately, like, wins are what people are going to remember for sure, especially down the line. I don't know how many top threes Calvin had 2 years ago. You know, I remember when people win things. So I would say, yeah, based on that alone, Gannon is having a better season. Now, I think he's, you know, he kind of reminded us that when he is playing his best, I think that he is the best player. I don't think there's anybody better than him right now, because I think his circle two putting is just unstoppable. And it's funny enough is that, you know, where he kind of showed his strength in his putt, that's where Calvin's weakness has sort of been lately. He did make some notable putts. He had that long one on 16 that kind of like kept things interesting. But, you know, I'm still, I feel so bad for Calvin, because I'm watching him and I'm like, I was literally watching him like, oh my gosh, like here he goes again. He's going to lose another one. And he was a little bit, he wasn't like, you know, he was two back to start today and finished two back. So like he put out a, or
he was one back,
one back start today and finished two back. But so it's not like he choked it away or anything. And he played well. That's why I'm
how many times can we say Calvin didn't choke something away before it just is like he did?
Well, here's my problem.
Because I agree he didn't.
My problem is that I think like, and I'm trying to like fight off that narrative in my head, because he shot 11 under.
But if you look at it, there's some crucial things. I've been staring at the scorecard for a while.
But he does mess up though.
Here's the crucial thing. He lost by two. Okay.
There's two things.
First off, he parred the first three holes.
Yeah, Gannon birdied those three. Bad start.
That alone, he wins.
Yeah.
If he goes birdie, 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 which was out there.
At least getting one.
Other notable thing is he threw OB twice and bogeyed 13 to Gannon's birdie. That ties
up. There were mistakes.
But
like,
those are the two, like,
it's so tough.
Those are the little mistakes where it's not necessarily choking it away, but I mean, someone is in here at a leaf blower. It's not necessarily choking it away. It's just like the player that he loses to doesn't make that mistake.
Yeah.
Is what it comes down to.
You're right. Yeah, we never changed the
light, man.
Nope. You're right. At the end of the day, even though he shot 11 under, Gannon shot 12 and played bogey free. So you're right. Like maybe at some point it's got to be, hey, you know what? Calvin just needs to play flawless in one of these rounds. Like that's what it takes. It's just so hard when like over and over and over again.
That's what's a weird one is like.
He's just playing solid. He's just not getting there.
He has. So if you go to the standings in the Pro Tour, he still has a lead on Gannon.
Yeah.
Because he is so consistent. I want to say his average finish is like fourth place.
Oh, it can't be.
It's like
worse.
Ludicrous.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like if you look at his season, his worst finish was 16th at a major,
which is hilarious.
That's his worst.
Yeah, even your worst.
Everything else is inside the top 10. His next worst is the seventh place.
Yeah.
Like he's disgusting. He just isn't winning.
He's insane. I'm gonna just hearing that again. Like I have to stick to my guns, which is that like he's a proven winner, right? This isn't like this is a guy who doesn't win. He is a proven winner. He is won two elite series already this year. Now the major thing, that's maybe a separate topic. You know, that can be its own thing. But like I would say there's a great chance he takes down one of these next two events. And even if he does it, you know, as Gannon was winning yesterday, I kind of also had the thought as we're nearing the end of the season, I was like, yeah, three wins on the pro tour. I think that's like the mark of an elite season these days. Like, I think that's what it is now. I think if you win, because I think there will be guys who repeat, but I think winning a third pro tour and, you know, the majors, obviously that helps a lot if you could win a major. But I think anybody who wins three pro tours in today's field has had like a elite season, because we might see Ricky or Calvin, you know, one of those two do it. But like, it's very special company at this point to win three times at the highest level.
Yeah, it's a weird, because at this point Calvin hasn't won since Jonesboro, which was what, April?
Yeah, it's been since April, I believe, since he's won an Elite Series event. He hasn't simmered down.
At what
down.
Point
it's just
does
like,
the Calvin can't win narrative come in?
It's like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I can't really start it because he has won, and he's won in clutch scenarios. I think
he just keeps coming in second and third.
It would benefit him a lot to grab a win on the second half of this season, just to like kind of shut everybody up. Because that's all, when you have a season this good, all it takes is one.
Let me tell you how disgusting Calvin's season is here.
So good. With it.
Let me tell you, because I'm looking at this and my mind is getting blown.
Get your barf bags ready.
So in the Pro Tour, only your top certain amount count. And the rest get dropped.
Yeah, so what's
he's dropping top threes. his Waco Open at Austin, Music City Open were all tied for third, dropped them.
How many thirds does he even have counting?
Well, it gets even
right
crazy.
Now.
DMC, tied for third, gone.
So how many thirds is he counting? How many of his are first
so,
and seconds?
Idlewild, Ledgestone, both seconds. PCS was a solo third. He has fourth at a major counts. Majors, I don't think you drop.
Yeah,
so fourth
points.
And 16th at major both count.
I think there are more points too, right?
Yeah.
Like 1.5 or 1.2.
So second at Idlewild, second at Ledgestone, second at Preserve. Only one third place so far. Now his Portland, this is an interesting one. Portland and Elite Plus, his tie for seventh got him more points than his tie for third.
The Elite Pluses
at Music City.
Are they double points? I feel like they are.
I don't know. His tie for seventh got him 83 points, and his tie for third at Music City got him 69. I don't think they're double. I think they're 1.5 points. I'm pretty sure. I think they're 150%.
What would it like? Can you see somebody who got that same place in a different event?
Well, he's tied seventh. So
did anybody else take a T7th though?
What's the other? Ledgestone, he got second at Ledgestone and he got 127 points. And then he just got second at Idlewild. He got 85. So yeah, it's 1.5.
So he got second at Idlewild.
85.
He got 85 and he got almost the same amount of points for a tied seventh at an Elite Plus.
Yes. Elite Plus tied seventh, got 83.25. But the second at Ledgestone, which was also Elite Plus, was 127 points. So it's 1.5 points.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, he's dropping tie for thirds is basically the point I was making. That's how good his season
that
is.
That's crazy.
He can tie for third at an Elite Series, not a Silver Series, an Elite Series, and drop it. Like, he's got to get second or first for it to count, basically.
That's bizarre.
And that's just gross. That's how good his season is, but if you don't win... Doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, I mean, when it comes down to...
Do you think Calvin would switch seasons with Gannon right now?
I believe so.
He would lose $2,000 in cash, and he'd be back of himself
say for that,
in 150 points.
Yeah, I mean...
But he'd have another win and another silver win.
Probably. I mean, here's the funny thing about like golf as a sport. The two... Like the hardest thing to do and the most valuable thing to do. So the hardest thing to do is to lead the entire tour in pro tour standings points at the end of the season. That's the hardest thing to do, I would say, right?
I would agree.
Yeah. And the most valuable thing to do is to lead the tour in cash. And yeah, he's got one of them. He doesn't have the cash lead because he hasn't reeled
Who's,
in one of the big ones.
Who has
ones.
The cash?
I don't think he has a cash. Or
he might. He has it on Gannon. Does Isaac have more?
No, he might have the cash lead.
Actually, I can just go to PGA.
So if he does, that's what I'm saying. He has like those two big, huge things, but ultimately, like, hey man, the narrative, Calvin can't win a major.
Yeah, like, it goes
that's
Calvin,
what follows you around.
Calvin so won. Yeah, then Gannon's two, then Chris.
How much
Starr
has he won
three.
This year?
70 grand so far.
That's 70, awesome, dude.
70 grand at 19 events.
Good for disc golf, man. $70,000. That's a lot of money for a little over half.
And this
of
is what's
season.
Crazy. So you have Calvin one, Gannon two, Chris and Tatar, 3. Isaac Robinson, 4. Missy Gannon, 5. Owen Scoggins, 6. And
well,
then Cole Rodalyn, 7.
Here's the thing about the FPO field. They get a solid purse, and when you have a less deep field and there's certain players like the ones you mentioned that dominate, there's money to be made in FBO. If you're a dominant FBO player, yeah, there's some money to be made out there. Because, what, I mean, Kristen's probably made...
Katrina Allen...
How much has Kristen made so
far? Katrina Allen's only $2,000 behind Paul McBeth so far in the season. Through...
What is Paul
And she's
made?
Played two more events than him. That's it. It's kind of crazy.
Well, Paul won PCS.
Paul's made $30,000. Katrina Allen's made $28,000.
I guess Paul was winning those European events, too. So he was getting winner purses.
Yeah, no, I was just like... I just was scrolling, and they've played similar amounts of events, and Katrina Allen's almost made as much as Paul McBeth. It just sounds like a crazy storyline.
It does.
Well, who else is? Who else is there? Any shocking people
lower than Katrina Allen?
Like, who's somebody like way down the list that wouldn't you expect to be there?
I don't know. I'd have to go to page two. Simon Lazat.
You mean page two?
24,000.
Yeah, that's one that's he surprised me this year. He hasn't.
James Conrad's made 17. Don't know. That's Chris Dickerson 16.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy when you think about it that way. When you think about it, Simon and Chris Dickerson combined have made less than half of what Calvin has made this season.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. Now we're
talking. We're
now
talking. That's a
stat.
We are talking.
Stat Mando right there.
Well, Stat Mando is down, dude. Yeah, what the frick?
What the heck?
Because I wanted to do like a head-to-head comparison of the season between Calvin and Gannon, and I can't.
That's a bummer for the power rankings. You guys better hold your breath for the power rankings. we're gonna be talking out of our rears. Yeah, that's what it's gonna sound like, man. If you thought that Katrina Allen tango was something, you just wait till we get to the power rankings.
There was a pretty incredible finish for Paul Ulibarri. We gotta shout him out,
dude,
here.
I do Come need on, to Paul. Shout out Paul Ulibarri. He's playing golf right now.
He had a 15th place at Ledgestone, yeah, and then a 4th place here. Shot a Come 13 on. Under final round.
Didn't he Come squeeze? On. He's like right outside the cut line, I think, for the tour championship.
I have not looked at that. We'll take a look at that in a second.
I think he's like right outside.
You were saying it was a short course, right?
Shorter, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably that definitely.
But Ledgestone wasn't. Oh, okay. He finished 14th. There 15th.
We go. Paul Ulibarri is rediscovering himself in
the other the other shocker was Jeremy Colling. They finished in top 10.
Big Jerm.
But there was a point where he was in the top 3.
Big Jerm's an interesting one because, like, yeah, he's an older guy, but he still chucks it. Like that guy still has plenty
of distance.
His
forehand gets up and goes. He's just scared to putt.
Yeah, he can't really always put it together.
Paul Ulibarri is 8 strokes out of the line, out of the cut. Double G is the line.
So he's one out.
So he's one. He's in 33rd. Yeah,
dude.
Double G is in 32nd at 354 points, and then you have Paul Ulibarri at 346 points. And then you have Robert Burge at 338.
It's getting so competitive to get into that tour championship at this point. Like
it's crazy.
Honestly.
Well, so what you have to look at is like players who aren't registered. Like Vino Makkala is not registered for the next two events. One of those being a playoff event.
Yeah.
Vino's at 396.
Oh, yeah.
Yuli could easily jump him.
What's the cut this year for after D'Glo?
I'd have to, we'd have to look.
That's because
it gets pretty aggressive because the next playoff event is MVP.
Yeah, it goes down
like 60 something.
That's why I'm wondering, like, who are the people that are going to get bumped out?
Well, who? Let's can how? I know
you're going
to
try and find something on the Pro Tour website.
So hard. Yeah.
Good luck with that. You're never finding it. Oh, Connor, I saw you miss that, dude.
Stop drawing attention to it, dude. I'm doing my own thing over here.
Yeah, you're never
finding. I'll never find it. Yeah. Oh, whoa. Registration details.
Okay.
This might be it.
That might help.
Okay. D'Glo after Ledgestone, top 96 MPO. Maple Hill, top 72 MPO. So D'Glo, it's locked in now.
Top 96. Who's missing
top
out?
Top 90. D'Glo was top 96.
Yeah, who's missing out? Who's on the bubble?
Tim Barham has missed it.
Oh, no!
Micah Groth just set the course record at Idlewild, so my bold prediction came true. It got set, 14 under. Big missed time. It. He's
Dang.
Gone.
Wow.
Let's see. Lori Lettinen, Jared Stoll, Nate Queen. Nate Queen. Now, it says he's registered for D'Glo, but he's in 108th place.
Cut.
So that'll be interesting to see.
Well, unless there's a bunch of people that aren't playing it that are inside the
maybe,
cut line.
Maybe that's the case.
But it only goes down to top 72. That's weak.
For, so then for Maple Hill, the cut line right now, you're looking at Jake Mons close, Clay Edwards, Connor O'Reilly, Scott Stokely, but he's not going
it's
back
just
over.
It's not super interesting yet. I think, and I understand like the Tour Championship, obviously it cuts it down to the 32. So like it does eventually get cutthroat. But I think I'd like to see one more playoff event. So I'd like it to go from like 100 down to 70 down to like 50, like somewhere in that range. I'd like to see it get a little harsher. Because right now it's like the guy's getting cut. Whoop-day.
Yeah, they're not. It's not really a big storyline.
Not a huge storyline.
The big storyline.
I understand
to follow,
it probably is for them, but like for us that are watching,
the big storylines to follow: Paul Ulibarri and Brody Smith, the Tour Life gang, sitting outside the cut right now.
They need a, they each of them need a good finish.
Brody's Come 50 on. Points out. Yuli's 8 points out. Yuli has now jumped Brody, which that was not the case before.
Yeah, all it takes. Well, Brody was hanging around. He was inside the cut and has fallen back a few spots since.
Yeah,
but all it takes, and I feel like it's going to be at the toboggan is where he kind of needs to make his move. But all it takes is like one top five.
Well, that's what happened is
that
Yuli,
might lock you in.
Yuli just gained 67 points on Brody.
Yeah. If Brody could lock in one more, just like, or maybe like a top 10 and a top 30 to finish out the season or something
okay,
like that.
I'm going to give you the list of names.
Could do it.
I'm gonna give you like 10-ish players.
Okay.
And the, so it's going to start at Mason Ford in 26.
Hunter's trivia.
And it, we're going to go down to Chandler Kramer in 38. And I want you to tell me which players are out that are in and which players are in that are out. It
okay.
makes more sense.
Okay, I understand.
So these players are in. Mason Ford, Joel Freeman, Vino Makkala, Andrew Presnell, Chris Clemens, Nicola Castro, Double G.
Dude,
those are the ins.
Tough.
Then these are the outs currently. Paul Ulibarri, Robert Burridge, Eric Oakley, Brody Smith, Jakub Semerad, Chandler Kramer, Andrew Marweed. I added one in there because I think Marweed's an interesting one. Which players are going where?
I'll be honest. Of the guys that are in, I really only see Nico and Double G as the ones who could get bounced from that list. Who were the ones
well,
just
the,
inside of them?
You have to remember, Vino Makkala is not playing.
Yeah, that was my other question.
D-Glow.
So he's
and he's not
one?
Playing the AFDO, but he is signed up for Worlds, it looks like.
Okay, so I would say Vino, Nico, and Double G could be the ones bounced.
Okay.
I would say Yuli, man, that would be impressive. I could definitely see Brody sneaking in. I absolutely could because he will play the events out.
Yeah.
He could sneak in. Who else is on the fringe?
Robert Burridge, Eric Oakley, Brody Smith, Jakub Semerad, Chandler Kramer, Andrew Marweed, and then obviously Yuli's right there.
It's just so tight. You have so many players who are capable of doing the exact same thing at every event, which is they could take a top 10 and they could finish an 80th. Yeah, I like Brody. I like Brody's chances to maybe sneak in there.
My picks, I think Yuli gets in.
That'd be awesome if both Brody
think,
and Yuli snuck in.
I think D-Glow and Worlds, I think Yuli can have a finish at one of those two. I think Yuli gets in. I think Robert Burridge gets in.
Burridge
and I think Brody Smith gets in.
Burridge is good.
Those are my three.
Yeah, that's
they
reasonable.
Get in. It's going to be interesting. Well, that'll definitely be a storyline. Now, for FBO, it's a little less interesting, I think. But we'll see. Lisa Fakus is on the cut right now. Hannah Wynn, Heidi Lane. Henna Blomroos is inside the line, but she's not playing.
See, that's an interesting because it's like Henna is somebody who could go really far in the championship potentially, but who is could get bounced out here if she's not going to play.
Well, Evelina Solonen is not going to make it. It's,
do you remember?
It's pretty
I think all
ludicrous.
The listeners remember, but do you remember, what was this, 2 years ago now, where like for the entire offseason, all we talked about was how the finish and invasion.
Yeah, Evelina and Henna
and how Evelina and Henna were like finally we are going to have like this amazing competitive top of the field, and now here we are.
I don't really want to just back up my point back to Katrina Allen, but she isn't third in the FPO points.
She gets wins. She does get wins. What her and Paige have
her
turned into.
Her worst finish prior to this week was she came in 24th at Ledgestone, but prior to that it was like 16th, and that was back in like February. Before it was 3rd, 8th, 1st, 5th, 3rd, 9th. I would consider her finish shocking, but we're not going to get back into it.
Listen.
She's in 3rd place.
I think I've just seen her do it before this year. I remember recalling a time where she's 12 to 15 strokes off the lead.
Now you got to double that. To get to this weekend.
I mean, it's
shocking. You say it. You can say it.
I don't know.
You're allowed
be
to say
shocked.
It, man.
Just be
shocked.
Shocked.
Come on. Let yourself be shocked.
For the camera.
Shocked.
Look into the camera and
look
be shocked.
Look
into
the camera. Just tell them you're shocked.
Come on, just she's shocked. Not good anymore. She's
blink,
not good.
She's blink, better than 30 strokes.
It's frustrating.
Blink twice if you're shocked.
It's more so. Here's what I'll say. What I'll say is more. What's like a calmer word for shocking?
Let me just put it this way. 30 strokes out in MPO is 90th place.
Give me a synonym for
you gotta
shocking.
Think of it that way.
Give me like a cinnamon for shocking. That's like
bamboozling.
No, that's less harsh.
Crazy. Surprise.
No.
Bewittling.
Troubling. Troubling. I'm gonna take that route because
troubling? That's fine.
It's troubling. It's a little troubling. That's actually perfect. It's a little troubling that she has such a performance on a course that you would think she would excel at because
so you could see how someone would be shocked by it.
I'm more troubled.
I could see how they'd be troubled.
I'm
by
troubled
it,
by it. I'm because like I come at it from more of an angle of concern.
I would go that far.
I go at it from more of an angle of concern.
Here's the thing. I know that she has me blocked on every social media that she has.
That's true.
I'm still a cat fan. It shocked me.
If you weren't blocked all the time, then you would maybe understand why.
Since you're not blocked all the time,
Trevor's troubled.
Since you're not blocked all the time, have you checked if she's hurt? I can't see it. So I don't know.
Do we need to use me as like the siphon?
Because I can't find her.
That's
on
a good
media.
Point. That's
I'm
a
blocked.
Good point. I'll check.
Actually, Trevor, would you mind DMing her and say, "Hey, Hunter wants to know if
my friend Hunter told
from
me
from Hunter.
You got to be careful saying you weren't shocked. She might block you next. That's how I got here.
I don't know, dude. I don't. Hey, you know, Katrina. I've interviewed her a few times. She's a nice person. She's not playing good at disc golf this time.
I hung out with her.
Whoa!
We wouldn't like. I did like escape room with her and Austin Hannum while I was blocked.
What?
I had no clue.
What?
You were
blindfolded.
What?
She did an escape room.
We hung out, and then I got home. And as soon as I got home, I discovered I was blocked the whole time.
That is tough.
That was what made it hurt more.
Hasn't posted since
now
August.
Now Hunter's 5th. Troubled.
No, I'm troubled. No, I'm shocked.
No story posts either.
I find it crazy.
So sounds like she's gone into LeBron.
She's gone radio silent.
LeBron,
bewildered.
Like,
that's the word I'm looking for.
She's went into the bewilderness.
I'm.
All right, it's time for the fan favorite segment of Trevor's Trivia.
That's funny, dude.
What you got?
Let's just skip it.
Today I've got Hunter's worst disc golf rounds, and we're going to guess how bad he smelled while he was playing.
Very. Probably.
No, dude, I'm just
good.
Kidding.
Like roses.
I think that we've...
I was slightly offended.
Brad,
so I did a AMA.
Later I have an HR thing to file.
I did a Ask Me Anything on our Reddit. We have a Reddit. It's called
How'd that
Foundation
go,
Disc Golf. It's great.
Reddit break.
But someone, I was slightly offended by this question.
Yeah.
Someone was like, if you were to like commit to playing disc golf.
Were you troubled by the question?
I was shocked that someone would think this of me. They said, if you were to commit, they knew they were asking me the questions.
Yeah.
If you were to commit to playing disc golf tournaments for a year straight, so like you're committed, you're playing disc golf, you're practicing, how high do you think you could get your rating? And then they said, I'll go ahead and answer. I would expect it to be like 930 to 920.
Wow.
People
and
are,
I just like responded back. I was like, the last time I played in tournaments and tried, I got the 987.
Yeah.
So I'd give myself like 970.
People are
920,
very silly, bro.
920? Yeah. Like, no
guys,
offense to the 920
guys,
rated players.
Just go to our PDGA ratings,
but
man.
920? Like, I mean,
Hunter and I don't ever play tournaments. And the last few tournaments we've played, we probably rated 950 or 960.
My last one, I think I did pretty bad. That was the Ivy Hill flex thing.
I don't know.
But I almost broke my neck, if you remember seeing that clip.
Yeah, that people are a little silly whenever they think
920?
About they think about how
I was hurt.
Hunter,
to be honest.
At Hunter's prime, he was legitimate a 980 to 990 guy for sure.
I'd agree.
So like
I just hurt. It just hurt a
little
bit. That was all.
No,
I just wanted to bring that up because I was venting.
Hey dude, come on, dude.
It just hurt.
Come
it just
on,
hurt,
man.
Man.
Hey, no trouble here, my man.
Were you shocked to hear that
image.
One?
That was an important image. The, I was shocked to hear that.
Yeah. It hurt.
That's disgusting, bro. 920. Do you know how easy it is to go out there?
You got me
trouble go
in
that
the wilderness over that one.
Yeah. All right. Trevor's trivia. Trivia with Trevor.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Hit him with the other try. Trevor does it better.
The what we're going to do here.
Yep.
I think I've done like something like this before.
Okay.
I've got a bunch of year-end world rankings. MPO. And we're going to, you're going to try and guess that year.
Oh, guess that year. We're working together?
Yeah, you can work
together. You
know,
together.
I love that. Okay. What do we got here?
I love those ones because then Hunter can look at me and be like, I don't know, Connor. I'm kind of thinking this. And I go, I think the same exact thing, Hunter.
Where do I want to start?
Just for those of you in the disc spinning game, I've unlocked something this episode.
All right.
And that is that if you have a real grippy disc and you grow your fingernails out just a little bit, you can get on that fingernail and it'll spin, I tell you what.
Here's the world ranking year end. This is the end of this year. I must say the year. Here's the rankings.
Oh, we're guessing the year.
Yes. Okay. Here's the rankings. Paul McBeth, Richard Wysocki. I'm obviously going from one.
Okay.
Paul McBeth, Richard Wysocki, Matty O, Greg Barsby, James Conrad, Kevin Jones, Chris Dickerson, Paul Ulibarri, Nate Sexton, Eagle McMahon.
That sounds
Paul's one.
I got to say the list gets even more fascinating after that.
I'll go just off of
I'll keep going. Just I'm going to keep going. 11. Oh. I'll give you 11 through 15. Andrew Fish, Sepu Payu, Johnny McRae, Cameron Colglazer, Calvin Heimberg.
I feel
this golf be weird.
I think it's 2018.
Okay, I was going to go 2017 to 2018 was my going to be my
I'm
guess.
I'm fine with 17 too. I'm just thinking Kevin Jones and Chris Dickerson have to be more recent era because Dickerson didn't start playing until I was in college.
Yeah. Oh,
and man. I was in college when I was like 2015, 2016.
When did Calvin start playing? Because I was thinking the same thing for Calvin.
Well, my gut said 2016, but 2016, I think Ricky would have pushed out Paul. 2017, I think Ricky might have also pushed out Paul. Paul's back number one. 2018, Paul won USDGC again. It's either 2017 or 2018, I think.
I was going to say 2017 or 2018, but you said 2018.
So 2018 came to my mind first. Let's go 2018.
That's correct.
Nice.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, I think Bars beat in fourth is probably like the biggest.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
That was a big one to me.
That makes sense.
Okay. One for one. Good job. We're doing four of these. All right. Next one. Read it from the top here. Nate Doss, Will Schuster, okay. David Feldberg, Nico LaCastro, Josh Anton, Jesper Lundmark, Marcus Kallstrom, Eric McCabe, Kale LaViska, Paul Ulibarri.
Are we in 2013?
No, because Paul's not on the list anywhere.
Okay.
Paul McBeth was not on that list, right?
He is the next one on the list.
Okay.
He's 11th.
So this isn't post-Paul winning Worlds.
So 2011?
Could be 11. I was thinking 2009.
Okay.
But I think Avery Jenkins would have been on that list.
You think?
2010's possible. No, 10's the first year Shoestrick won USDGC. By 2012, Shoestrick was the number one player in the world, I think. 2009, Shoestrick might have been the number one. No, Nico LaCastro was number one in the world in 2009.
What did he just...
Nate Doss is one. I think we go 2011.
Okay.
I like that. 2011.
But I thought you said... Correct. I thought.
Heck yeah. Okay.
Two for two. That is very impressive. Nice. Good for you guys. All right. You got two more. If you can get logic, all these, I'll be very impressed. This is an all-time performance.
We're getting all of them. I'm confident.
Okay. Here we go.
He's going to be like, Ken Klima, but
could be any year.
98.
Richard Wysocki, Carl Johan Nybo, Paul McBeth, Nico LaCastro, Eagle McMahon, Nate Doss, Jeremy Colling, Bradley Williams, Paul Ulibarri, Matty O.
I'm thinking so
KJ's higher than Paul. I was going to say 2016.
Because that's the year that Paul had like the broken disc in his back. And remember, he DNF'd for like the first time ever.
Yep.
It has to be because, I mean, for Ricky to be up, the only other option is like a 2014 possibly. I think it's 14 or 16. 14, Paul did win Worlds, but I think 16 is Ricky's dominant era.
Think about...
It's just, was KJ Nybo that relevant in 2016?
I'm thinking about the... So, I feel like relativity has to do with... I mean, you got your name on a disc. He had the T-Bird, and I feel like that was around 2016 when he had his World Star T-Bird.
But that was just like a 12-time Finnish champion.
Yeah. You're right.
Hey.
I did know the name KJ Nybo, and I didn't start playing until 2015. So I think let's go 2016.
I love KJ Nybo. Correct.
Yes! That's crazy, dude. Three for three? This is wild. I feel like I'm being pranked right now.
You are.
All right.
We're pranking
Final
right
round.
This is it.
Final round.
Lock in, Connor.
What if he's pranking us?
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm going to start just doing crazy trivia.
This is the final round. All right, we could actually
Have
get
you seen
all
that guy that walks around Times Square and will ask like basic questions to people that they should know, and he just says... Yes. Like, they're just like, that's my favorite.
Like, oh, okay.
All right, final round. Here we go. Barry Schultz, Ken Klimo, Steve Rico, Avery Jenkins, Dave Feldberg, Josh Anton, Mike Moser, Nate Doss, Johnny McRae, Jesper Lundmark.
I'm going 08 is where my head was at.
I was thinking 05, so I'm good with 08.
I just don't know because we got to think.
I'm not confident in
05. Avery Jenkins is starting to get relevant at that point.
Okay.
Klimo would have still been around and relevant, but he wasn't.
Give us the list one more time.
It's just
Barry Schultz, Ken Klimo, Steve Rico, Avery Jenkins, Dave Feldberg, Josh Anton, Mike Moser, Nate Doss, Johnny McRae, Jesper Lundmark.
Because by 12, Anton was really prominent and then gone. I think 11 or 12. So this is he's like still coming onto the scene. I think it's going to be, I like 2008 to 10 range, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Because this is pre-Paul, pre It's also like, pre-Doss, right? No, Nate Doss? No.
Nate Doss I like he was number eight in the world at this point.
Okay, so it's kind of pre-Doss.
I like 2008.
But Doss win Worlds in 2008?
I do not know.
Doss won Worlds in like 03 and 04.
Oh, he's really early.
And then he won, I think, or maybe he won some
Let's
in the
go
early
eight.
2000s.
Let's go eight.
All right.
2008.
2006.
At least we didn't throw that year out
there.
If it would have been 05, I would have been really hurt.
That was a tough one. Dang. Well, that was like kind of a special
moment. Well, we just found out that we only know the eras that we watched.
Yeah, in fairness.
The eras that we watched, disc golf, and we know.
That's fair. I mean, that would have been a shot in the dark.
All I do is think about lead cards. Lead cards that I watched whenever I was playing disc golf.
The other ones you guys like used real reason and got it. That was a shot in the dark. So like that was, yeah, that was impressive though. 3 for 4.
Thanks, Trav. Dang, man. We could have been somebody.
That was a fun one. It would have been special for the podcast. You maybe would have won a grippy. Now it's more like you could maybe win like a slippy.
Dang, we could have got a grippy from that, Hunter.
We could have.
I'm troubled.
You're troubled.
I can't pull up
You're in bewilderness right now.
So I'm bewildered. Paul posted an Instagram injury update.
He sees light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, he made a post. It was kind of vague. It's a really solid post to read, but it was vague when it comes to like the injury aspect as far as like when's he going to be back.
Show me the Carfax.
I can't pull it up on my computer because I'm not signed into Instagram. So that's no,
Paul,
not blocked.
Paul blocked you.
I can pull it up on my phone.
Paul blocked.
But you got me blocked.
Basically, there's no information as to like his return in the post. It's more so like his mindset.
Probably safe to say Worlds, right?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm thinking knowing Paul, he'll miss D-Glow.
Coming on a chariot.
And aim for a return to Worlds. That's what I'm guessing.
Catching fire.
Because he did say he sees
light. He'll probably win Worlds and then we'll probably be like, oh my gosh, Paul McBeth.
He did say he sees a light at the end of the tunnel.
Is that a metaphor? Is this the year with the train in the logo? That was last year.
Yeah.
Or when is that, like 2 years ago? Was that Utah year? That would have been... He needs to start... When are disc golfers going to start dropping like the little Easter eggs, like the Taylor Swift? You ever seen like album things?
Mm-hmm.
We need to start doing that.
They don't know. The thing is, Trevor, they don't know if they're going to win. Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
Taylor knows when she's going to drop an album.
But we know we're going to drop like a disc.
That's true.
We could, but like nobody knows to look for them yet. We almost need to hire somebody to like be like, guys, I found the foundation Easter egg.
Let's just go back and edit posts.
Yeah.
Just put them in
there. It was always there. And people were like, they've been doing this for years. So that's gaslighting. That mass is. Gaslighting.
Trevor,
that's troubling.
Trevor put out a post on Foundation's Instagram.
Dude, shout out him.
That said, who's your GOAT? And it has King Klima with his accolades. And then you have Paul McBeth with his accolades. I'll read the accolades in case you're unfamiliar.
You like how I set this trap?
Yes.
Because like obviously Paul's accolades are like, well, nobody's are as good as Ken's.
Yeah.
But it's such a trap.
So Ken Klimo, 18-time major champion, 12-time world champion, 5-time U.S. champion, 11-time player of the year.
Paul McBeth, sounds like a lot of championships.
17-time major champion, 6-time world champion, 3-time U.S. champion, 6-time player of the year.
No, that's not as good.
Well, here's the thing. Paul's clearly the GOAT. Yes,
clearly.
But my favorite thing was reading the comments because it just got...
Did it turn into a fight?
Well, there is a lot more people...
It's definitely just trying to start fighting there.
There is a lot more people that consider Klimo the GOAT than I would have thought.
What are they, like 90 years old?
Well, one of them was Disc Golf United, which is Innova East, so I found that funny.
That's funny.
But I was trying to find this one... The whole reason I wanted to bring it up...
Well, the whole GOAT argument is... It's all about how you look at it, right? Because like when people talk about MJ and LeBron, sometimes they use like the word greatness versus like best basketball player versus greatest basketball player. Or even sometimes most influential basketball player versus best. Like there are different ways to talk about the GOAT. Because like if you're talking about from a way that somebody impacted the sport, then it gets very interesting because Klimo did impact the sport in a very large way, but like at the same time, so did Paul, and arguably more. But it's also tough because Paul just came in an era where disc golf was like ready to boom.
Ready to boom, all right.
Can't climb.
Well, it just depends on what you consider good.
I'll tell you what. Once we get these time machines going, we're going to settle a lot of sports arguments.
Well, that'll set. This one, we don't need a time machine. If you watch the coverage, Paul would mop the floor with Ken Klimo.
We just need like a deadliest warrior simulation of Paul McBeth and Ken Klimo.
I can't find the comment. It's the whole reason I wanted to bring it up because someone had said, they basically said like how impressive Klimo's Worlds wins were. And they're like, and this was at an era where he was playing like 10 rounds, thinking that was an argument for Klimo. How many world championships do you think Paul would have if Worlds were still 10 rounds long?
Probably wouldn't have. He wouldn't have lost the ones he lost, probably.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is where would he be at? He's at 6 right now.
He would have
won 12, 13, 14, 15.
He would have.
Would he have won 16?
The only way that you can say for sure probably is the one he lost to Conrad and definitely the one he lost to Barsby. Ones that Rick won, those can be argued against.
He was storming back.
He was there, though. Yeah, he was there.
He finished in second.
You could
definitely
make a strong argument for eight at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. More rounds does not.
I think more rounds plays to Paul's
favorite. Would have had to play the 10 rounds. It's not like just Paul would have to. Like, yeah. It's not like it's an endurance.
But that's what I just thought was funny, because like that was someone's argument. And I was like, I think you're arguing for
these
Paul
old heads,
than you think.
Man. These old heads.
Because Paul could have realistically been at 10 straight right now.
Yeah.
If they were all 10 rounds.
Let's get real.
Let's be real.
I'm thinking about it.
I mean, if he wins this year, he's going to be heading to his backyard course next year.
Yeah, he has a chance to go 7-8.
Could.
Because, I mean, you got to like him at GMC, and you got to love him at Worlds here.
Love him next year, yeah.
And if he gets to 8 world championships in this era.
I bet the house on him.
Maybe that's what he means by light at the end of the tunnel.
He's eventually coming to Lynchburg.
Railroad City.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. That's what they call us.
That's Windy what they City. Call us. Do we have a thing?
Power rankings.
Hill City.
That's right.
Seven
Silly
Hills.
Boy.
Stupid.
Which also, Rome is a city of seven hills.
Yeah.
A little bigger. Oh,
well, Rome and Lynchburg are very similar.
Yeah. Well, we also weren't built in a day.
There's a Lynchburg, Tennessee. Y'all know that.
Yep. Yeah. Because people think that we're where Jack Daniels is from.
Yep.
And it's actually Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Hit him with it.
That must be tough to be the second most popular at Lynchburg, like being Tennessee one. Like,
yeah.
Ours is obviously the better one.
Yeah. You guys got Jack Daniels. We've got rookies.
Yeah.
No, there was something.
Have you ever heard of Bacon Street?
Have you heard
Stupid?
Have you ever heard of dipping cookies in milk? We created that.
I believe the folding chair
we'll
was
get
invented
into that
in Lynchburg.
On the mailbag. What?
I believe
the folding chair.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, come on.
I think
on.
I just saw that on Facebook. So,
well,
you enjoy sitting?
Yeah. Yeah. Sit much?
Yeah. How are you going to drink your Jack Daniels if you're not sitting?
Yeah. How would that butt be feeling if you weren't able to sit in your folding
numb
chair?
Numb much?
Numb much, dude? All right, get on topic. All
right, power rankings.
You guys
now,
are killing me right now. You're
here's
hilarious.
The problem. Here's the problem. We
There's
don't have Stat Mando.
Range of emotions in this.
We don't have Stat Mando.
I'm sweating, dude.
The good news is that our MPO guys showed out. Our top guys.
Again, the thing needs to move up,
guys. Whenever we shoot these podcasts, we always turn the air conditioning off so that it's not loud, and it gets so hot. And
oh, we normally
so
shoot them in the morning. We're shooting this one in the afternoon.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's warmer.
We already played around.
Yeah. I'm also wearing a crew neck.
I won.
You did do that to yourself.
Do we go Gannon moving up to second or first? Is Gannon better than Calvin?
You guys tried to answer that question earlier in the podcast. Didn't come to a conclusion, eh?
We really need Stat Mando at this moment.
I think Gannon second.
Mr. Mando, Mr. Stat, Dr. Stat, can I call you that? Can you please get your website back on? Are we sure it's still not working?
Yeah, I just checked it. I mean, I'll check it right now.
Right now. Let's get
I checked it during this.
That is like, I don't know, being the tech guys and your website's down.
Yeah, we need the Matt
Stando.
That might
be tough.
It's almost as bad as like trying to join a podcast and being a robot.
Yeah, I mean,
I found out my Wi-Fi card's bad in my computer.
Anybody? Yeah, we figured it out. Don't worry, we're gonna test it tonight. It's gonna be great. Catch you tomorrow.
Hit him with it.
Maybe I got some stuff in the morning. So, we have Isaac Robinson 4 after Ricky. We like that.
Yeah.
And then Eagle 5. I don't think Eagle's there.
What does
was Eagle there?
No, surely not. Now, if he finished outside the top 30, I'll be shocked.
Oh.
Eagle was not there.
Thank goodness.
Paul also not there.
I cannot handle shock Trevor.
James Proctor, where'd he come? The proctologist. 22nd. That's
well.
Fine.
What are you smiling at?
Simon. Did Simon beat Proc?
He was there. He did not do great. I think he was there.
Yeah, he's there. Where?
Simon? Hello?
Salmon Lazat.
My computer just stopped working. Oh, there he is. 18th.
Just look for the German flag.
So he's fine. They can stay in their same spots.
As long as the boys are chilling.
Corey Ellis, let's see where he finished.
Big core.
Nowhere. He didn't play. Corey Ellis is not there.
Corey the Snake.
So that's fine. He's fine to stay. And then Cole Radalin. Let's see what happened here.
Yeah, talk about a flop.
14th.
Never mind.
Great.
Pretty good.
He won.
Okay, so I think our top 10 is fine. We move Gannon. We bump Gannon over Rick. Goes Calvin 1, Gannon 2, Ricky 3, Isaac 4, Eagle 5, Paul 6, Proctor 7.
Did anybody else finish like really high up that we need to be like getting on our radar? That's the other question.
Paul Ulibarri. Klein.
Kyle Klein would probably be that guy.
Matty O, maybe. Ezra Robinson,
I have a feeling if he has a top 3 pretty soon here.
Aaron Gossage came in 14th. I feel like he was hot at the beginning of the season.
He was, but he cooled off a little bit.
Okay, FPO.
Ezra Robinson's kind of putting together a season. Let's put some respect on his name. He's like ranked 20th now.
Here's my suggestion. Robinson. I say we put Valerie Mandahano in 5th and bump Haley King out, because when is Haley King playing disc golf
again? We don't know.
She's injured, and we don't know when she's coming back.
Yeah, I respect that.
And Valerie Mandahano just won.
Yeah.
So I think we just slide Val into 5th.
Was Ella there?
Yeah, Ella, I think, played okay. I pulled that out of my butt. I don't know. She came in 16th.
That's not good.
Okay, let's bump Ella and let's put Haley King. Let's put Valerie, it's like pulling up a contact for Valerie Mandahano when I type her name in.
That's crazy, dog.
I think we go Haley King. I think we bump L out. So Haley King for Valerie Mandahano.
How
do
we go
5.
From tossing out Haley from
okay,
Val?
Okay, so let's put Val in fourth. Well, because Val doesn't belong in fourth. Let's
maybe
be, let's
she does.
Be,
maybe
she doesn't. I can't use Stat Mando to prove it, but she doesn't. She's had a bad season.
She is Stat Mando. She's only in there. Valerie Mando.
That is a good point. Does yeah. that count?
I no. make a lot of points.
So Val this season
this
has scored
a lot of points.
18th, 6th, 9th, 5th, 30th, 1st.
It's not. It's been a roller coaster ride.
All right, I'm happy with this. Kristen, Owen, Missy, Haley, Val.
Shout out. Surely Haley doesn't
deserve
to be there.
Who should be there?
I don't know, dude.
Katrina Allen?
I don't know, dude.
Holland Hanley probably belongs in there. Yeah.
Low key?
I think we put Holland 4.
We need Stat Mando.
I think I like that. Yeah, I like that. I'll Google. Cool. I'll look up Holland Hanley just to make sure. Just to pass the eye check.
Look what we've been reduced to. We've been reduced to this.
Oh,
Googling.
Recently Hollins went 3rd, 2nd, 5th, 7th, 3rd.
Toss her in.
Yeah, she's good in 4th. There we go.
Go for it.
All right, that's Grip Locked. That's going to wrap it up for this week. Don't forget to tune into the preview show on
I won't forget,
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Preview show of D-Glow.
Yes. First playoff event?
First playoff event of the year. It's
are we doing playoff beards?
No.
I feel like it's funny, what like nobody mean? Cares about the playoffs really in disc golf yet because they don't seem to matter
well, because
that much.
We go into the playoffs and we come out of the playoffs yeah. and we go back into the they're, playoffs and we come and back out of the
are,
playoffs and we go
are,
back into the playoffs.
They are important hey, for the idea that like those players that are jockeying, they're very important for them. Mm-hmm. But obviously, like every other sport, the playoffs is such a big deal. Like maybe we need to like do our part and lean into like
I need
it's
something
playoff
to lean
time.
Into. Well, the problem is even when you give them a stroke advantage, you're only for 2 rounds. You take that away too. Just, give me something to care about, Pro Tour. Then I'll care.
Wow.
Press release coming out later. Give them something
dude.
To care about.
It's probably gonna come out between now
yeah.
and the when
probably
this
from
releases.
Like probably the second we hit stop recording, they're gonna drop that.
They're
just,
like, this is something.
There's
$100 million
if you win the playoffs, and Hunter gets it.
And you get a monster car.
Only yeah. if you think, only if Hunter says that the playoffs matter. Did you say a monster car?
Yeah.
What's a monster car? You mean a monster truck? So I think he means a monster truck.
That's why it's funny.
All right, you get Gravedigger. We'll see you next week.